You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 10 April, Trump has suspended reciprocal tariffs for 90 days, leaving just the 10% tariff in place and those on China, which are 125%, the highest in over 100 years. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Ken and Yana. Scope Prime, yep, so Trump folded. Can markets and business trust him? That's perhaps the bigger point. Charles Savage from Purple Group Results, that saw profits more than doubling. Shelley Hartman from Morningstar, hidden beliefs influencing our financial decisions. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, easing of tensions between DA and ANC over the Expiration Act. Act was never conceived to attack property rights. News 24, this is trade war. China hikes U.S. tariffs to 84%. Markets in turmoil, in this case, crashing higher. Those morning markets, the U.S. is green. S&P up 9.5%, Nasdaq up 12%, respectively the third and second largest up days ever. Over in the east, it's mostly green. Sydney's down 1.9%. Tokyo is up 8.6%. Hong Kong up 2%. Tencent up 2.25%. Commodities, green. Gold futures, 3,133. Brent, 64.84. Platinum, 9.37. Palladium, 9.20. Rand is 19.31. Bitcoin, 81,500. Top 40 opening call, green, 4,100 points or 5.5%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Kia Nanyana. You find him, of course, at Scope Prime. Kia, I had carefully crafted some cunning questions for you. I woke up this morning to discover that it was all out the window. Massive update as Trump walks back the tariffs for 90 days. Wall Street can manage, I suppose. I mean, the bigger issue perhaps is trust and uncertainty, which are, I mean, we just don't know from day to day, and business particularly likes that. Wall Street wouldn't mind some of that either.
And that's true, Sire. You know, I think with the questions that you sent me over last night, I think it was one of those things where you're kind of preparing for something. And I still had my monitors up at about 9 o'clock last night, and then the tariffs got halted, and we just started to see jumps of about 8% on the Nasdaq, on Wall Street about 7.5%, and for me, what I really like looking at is the convexity of volatility. And essentially, the VIX is one of the most telling systematic risk indicators for me, because It tells you about where the market sentiment really is. And I can tell you that yesterday, it moved almost 30% at that time of the announcement, which shows you where the market does not truly have firm footing. And it's more to do with trust of Donald Trump. So they always say, fool me once, shame on you, but fool me 10 times, shame on you. And that's the feeling that I have right now.
And it is, and I can't help thinking, I mean, yeah, a lot of talk around business and their uncertainty, you know, do they onshore, etc. I mean, this doesn't really bring them certainty. What it probably does mean is that if I'm an American importer, I'm importing as much stock as I can over the next 90 days. So we could actually see a fairly strong bounce in business activity as sort of companies stockpile ahead of the deadline. And who knows what will happen in 90 days.
And that's true. The truth about this is that they've walked back the tariffs, but they have not cut back on tariffs.
Yeah.
There's still a baseline tariff of 10%.
Yeah.
And looking at where China is, they have not pulled back the tariffs that they imposed on China. And for me, what was very interesting yesterday was the Chinese central bank started telling that all the participants to stop buying dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And that you started to see going down in the price. And I think over that, those are the effects of the trade war. The sell-off in U.S. Treasuries, I think, has nothing to do with the fundamental risk activity, but just retaliation on this war. Tariffs are a war. And currently, China and the U.S. are at war.
Yeah, and I can't help thinking, I was saying before we came on air, you know, China locked down their economy for 3 years in pandemic. China probably can not blink quicker. You mentioned the Treasury's last question. The US 10-year, I mean, yesterday this time it was collapsing. I'd never seen anything. It was one of the craziest things I'd seen. That, of course, was until this morning. But it's still at, what, 4.279? You know, all the talk of all the refinancing of Treasury debt, that's still a eye-wateringly painful number for the US economy.
And it's a number which I don't think they can currently stomach. And and traditionally you see that the US government bonds are the world's safest asset. I mean, they're the true risk-free asset. And for me, the movement that has been more surprising actually is on the longer end of the yield curve at 30 years. And yeah. Essentially you want to finance on such long terms, and you don't necessarily want to be financing at pain points within that yield curve. And I think it's really just more of fear of putting money within, locked up for such a long period of time with so much uncertainty, with a president who seems like they have a red button on their desk.
Yeah, that 30-year at 4.681, it also went above 5%. Well, it went above 5% yesterday. The 10-year went above 4.5%. This perhaps, they always say, the bond market rules, the equity market follows. We'll leave it there. Kenyon Nyana, Scope Prime. Appreciate the early morning insights. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Charles Savage, CEO of Purple Group. Disclaimer up front, I hold shares in Purple. Results 6 months ending February, revenue up 25.8%, HEPS up 204%. The 6 months made more HEPS than the entire previous year. Charles, appreciate the time. In my sense, you've really kind of hit that sweet spot now. And the number that jumps out to me, average revenue per user, 146 Rand. Cost to serve a client, 85 Rand. Every client is now nicely profitable. And I imagine you can probably grow that ARPU faster than you're going to grow the costs.
Yeah, Simon, thanks for the interest and the call. Look, I think that number is the standout number. And I think the number that actually tells the story perhaps better is for every 100 Rand of revenue, we now deliver 70 Rand of profit.
Yeah.
Which just really talks to the scale of the organization and our ability to, you know, turn profits either into reinvestment and growth or deliver it to shareholders.
And you've got over 1 million active accounts now. Is there any sort of sense of slowdown in signups, or is it still just every day just hundreds of more people arrive?
I think of 13% active clients, were up around 10%. Those are still very good numbers in the context of 1 million customers and current economic environment. I think we've still got a lot of headroom growth to eases, the sort of macroeconomic eases, inflation rates come down, and there's more kind of certainty around and stability around financial markets. So there's, you know, at least another probably 6 or 7 million clients out there that we need to go and acquire.
You mentioned the tough times. I mean, average inflow per retail client was up 49% to, what, 5,200 and change. It's still off the 2022 number. It is tough out there. I mean, yes, markets had a good year last year, but inflation was down, interest rates are down. But to be clear, it's tough being a South African consumer, yet folks are finding some cash.
Yeah, if you know, the differential between our inflation and our interest rates is just not fair, quite frankly. But what is interesting is that despite that, with just a small decline in interest rates, you've seen a 49% improvement in deposit rates. And we expect, you know, the first cuts are normally the hardest cuts because you kind of underweight or overweight debt or credit. So we expect that as interest rates unlock, that acceleration will also unlock. But it was great to see customers coming back the minute there was a reduction in interest rates. So I think there's a lot of headroom for growth from reducing interest rates and client deposits as well.
How many products, because you now got a range of products, I mean, a bunch of them. How many products does the average client have these days? I mean, obviously, they've got a standard easy account. What's the average number of products?
Look, it's only 1.5 products per customer. And if you look at, you know, how many products we serve, there's a lot of growth of opportunity to continue to convert customers into new products. We need to do more work, and our platform needs to be better at introducing customers to more products. And we much harder at getting our customers to consume more products from us.
When you're talking about the Easy Crypto, you talk around a Bitcoin ETF on the JSE. Is this something you're hoping to do? Is this something that you've got approval so far? I know others have tried and failed. Is this a dream or a reality at this point in time?
Well, it's part reality, part dream. Look, I think a Bitcoin ETF is an eventuality. It's a certainty on the JSE at some point. There won't be one, as you've just noted, like lots of people are stacking up to be there and to, you know, offer it. But there is a high degree of uncertainty about when it's going to happen. But, you know, our applications are in and we're working to understand the framework and make sure that we're right there when the doors open.
Yeah. And to your point, it is an eventuality. It is about perhaps the when more than anything else. Post year end, this is obviously to end of February. It's been a wild 10 days on global markets. You and I have chatted many times over the years when markets are tough. And the one thing you've always commented is the resilience of your clients. They're not panicking. They cleverly buying. I remember the Sasol story when it was down at around 20 Rand. Are you seeing the same in this market sell-off?
I'm glad your memory is so good, because mine wasn't. And I was, wading through the last 10 days wondering what the response would be. But I should have known that our customers were going to pitch up, and they pitched up with more capital than they did in previous periods. So just as an example, the first 7 days of April, they deposited 400 million Rand. On Monday, which was the kind of, there was carnage on Monday, they deposited 91 million Rand in a single day. So, the old adage that retail runs away from a fight or from a storm, it's just not true. They've had cash on the sideline waiting for an opportunity to buy at lower levels, and they're stacking in to buy discount stocks.
And that is 20 years ago. Markets were scary. And, we just didn't have the information. There was very little out there. This is around the fact that there's that information. There's the education. There's the community groups. There's the social media. It's a much, perhaps, less scary place to be in a stock market than it was 20 or 30 years ago when, you had to phone your broker and hope they didn't laugh at you.
Yeah, and just look at Trump. He's a social media maniac. Yeah. And he's driving the dialogue, and everything he does, is released on, Trump and on X. So the retail investor's got the same access point as an institutional investor. And there's no differentiation anymore between access to information.
Yeah, that's it. The retail client is now an institutional client. Smaller pockets, but the same process. Charles Savage, CEO, Purple Group. Always appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Purple results, HEPS up 204%. Someone asked me, what about the dividend? No dividend. They are spending that money. The question is, are you a happy shareholder? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Shelley Hartman from Morningstar South Africa. Shelley, appreciate the early morning time. Our relationship with money as individuals is I think very personal, probably more than most people truly understand and appreciate, and influenced by a lot of subconscious beliefs that have been formed over our lives, and in many cases from our childhood even.
Good morning, Simon. You are 100% correct. And I find this topic so interesting because the more you sit down and think about it, the more you think of how your early years has an impact on the way that you think about finances and money today. So I think it's really important to think about it, become a little bit more aware about it, and then you can learn to work with it.
Is there, if we're talking around this happening through our lives, but also from when we're younger and being subconscious, there must be a role that parents, that caregivers can sort of play in shaping our money mindset from those at a very, very young age.
So, yes, 100%. It can almost go two ways. So in a really positive case, I think parents, obviously, children do observe their spending habits and their attitudes towards saving and how they deal with financial stress. So in a good situation, if a child grows up in a household where they see budgeting and planning and other financial goal setting, it really does tend to develop healthier financial habits. But then on the other side, if they grow up in a household where parents are constantly worrying about money and financial security, it can lead to a situation where they feel, okay, maybe in their lives, they're going to feel a similar belief of financial insecurity.
Yeah, it sort of it set the standard and imprinted young. You talk around the concept of money scripts as a financial tool. What are money scripts?
So I think they are so interesting. They are essentially your unconscious beliefs that drive the way that you make financial decisions. So Dr. Brad Klontz, who's a certified financial planner and a behavioral expert in the US, he identified these four scripts. And often what happens is people identify with maybe one a little bit more than the others. So just maybe to go through the list, the first is the money avoidant type. So that's where you believe that money is bad and inherently evil. Then you've got the money worship type, and that's where you believe that money is pretty much the solution to all problems. So you tie your self-worth to your financial success. The third one is your money status. So that's where you believe that money equals social standing. Mm-hmm. And often this is a case where people almost spend a little bit out of their means just to try and keep up with the Joneses, mm-hmm. as they say. And then the last one is the money vigilance. So this is a strong desire to avoid spending, and then where people have excessive worries about spending.
Okay. And I mean, that makes perfect sense. And they really are the sort of archetypes. I suspect, I mean, identifying that and saying, oh, I fall into perhaps one of the categories, perhaps some folks even a little bit more. But knowing where you sit is a good first step. But I imagine you really need, I don't know, practical strategies to get you off those scripts. Rather, awareness is important, but you need to, I don't know, have plans to overcome unhealthy thinking.
100%. So as you say, once you've sat down for 10 minutes and you've identified what script you think does apply to your lives, mm-hmm. I'd say the next step is sitting down again for another 10 minutes and trying to just think about it and think, does that still serve you in your current life? Because often it is formed from an outdated or a limiting belief that doesn't serve mm-hmm. you. So what I'd like to say to people in this case is, if you, for example, have the money status script where you are, I think there you need to try and focus on things that you do have in your life rather than what you don't have. So, for example, if a friend gets a new car or something like that and it triggers a little bit of a feeling of insecurity, what you've got to do is think about all the things that you do have in your life, your people around you, your skills, and all the things that you're going to achieve in your life.
Actually, that's a great point. Focus on what you do have. I think you're right. Far too often we look at what we don't. I imagine as well is that when you're spending that second 10 minutes and thinking about it, is engage people. Talk to your partner. I mean, even perhaps your extended family and friends. And I know we don't like to talk about money, but those can be hugely helpful conversations for everyone involved.
Absolutely. And that is exactly what I actually did when I was going through this exercise myself. I mm-hmm. chatted to my husband, I chatted to my parents, and sometimes you get a really interesting third party perspective that people might notice that you aren't necessarily aware of. But I think almost as importantly is I would recommend that you chat to your financial advisor, because sometimes mm-hmm. it's a little bit more than just self-reflection and willpower that you need to actually overcome this. And your financial advisor at the end of the day is trained to deal with identifying these biases and stopping you from falling victim to them. So I think a really important step is tell your financial advisor, look, I really think I fall victim in this category. And as they say, the first step to fixing a problem is realizing that you have one, and then you can start realizing where that pops up in your life and make steps to try and fix it.
Yeah, and I like that. And you're not the first person to suggest to me that your financial advisor in many ways is also a financial therapist and to use that accordingly. We'll leave it there. That's Shirley Hartman, Morningstar South Africa. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with Nerina Fisser yesterday. She's, of course, from ETFSA. We're talking about exchange-traded product tracking errors. What are they, and how do they get so ridiculously low? For example, the Satrix Top 40 is 0.056%. That is lower than their stated total expense ratio of 0.1. We asked if you know about the tracking error of your ETP. Two-thirds said no. What? Hey, never heard of it. Quarter said, let me go look. The rest said, always check. Checking. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Spending habits.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.